I'm Catherine Bosch, and this is the topic of tonight's session is peacemaking in the home. I want to look at peacemaking from a variety of perspectives. I'd like to first read a little poem written by Ivy Clift, grade 7, who says, under a title of Nuclear Warfare, "It seems to me a trifle strange that we may pray for peace and still build weapons. If utopia has no wars at all, and we seem to seek perfection, why must we fight? Killing people has no excuse, or none that sounds all right. It all seems crazy. Russia and U.S. always fight. Europe can see her death. What is the point?" Out of the mouth of babes. Here's another one by Jonathan Weinstock, age 9. Says, "Dear President Reagan, why do you have to make nuclear weapons? I want to have a nice life without having to worry about getting killed in a war. They don't help anything but taking the risk of killing thousands of people. Don't you know what you're doing? You want a lot of people getting killed if there is a war. That's the way it looks right now. Please stop making nuclear weapons. I don't want to get killed when I'm about 15. I'm only 9 now. If you thought about it, you might change your mind and care a little bit more. If you were me, you might feel a little scared like I do. Jonathan." Well, we can think about war, the ultimate war, the wars that were to end all war, the big war, and we might think of the little wars, the ones that we experience daily in our homes, perhaps, or in our community, or with a friend or someone at work, or with a partner, or with a child, or with a sibling. And we've got a lot of issues to deal with on peacemaking. And where do we begin? Well, we might look a little bit at what is peace. What are some of your ideas of what peace is? How would you define peace?
Without strife.
Without strife?
Harmony.
Pardon?
Harmony.
Harmony. What's this tranquility? What's this peace we're spending such a huge portion of our national budget to gain? What is it all about? What are we looking for?
Security.
Okay. We want to find. I'm not going to be talking about nuclear weapons and all that. I'm wanting to begin. If this is what a definition of a value is, something you're willing to fight for. And it looks like we have a strong value for peace that we're spending such a great, huge, gigantic amount of dollars on, that we cut out a lot of people budgets because war is such a terrible thing that we don't want, so we need to be strong enough so we don't lose if it ever comes to it. But I wonder where we really need to begin. And I look at a couple of other definitions, and of course one of them is living with the absence of violence and war. That might be looking at it from a negative perspective, what we don't want. Not negative in terms of bad, but what we don't want. And what we do want might be a kind of appreciation of other people, regardless of sex, race, ethnic origin, culture, or mores. We might want to look at peace as, in a positive way, what it is, being that of a lifestyle of encouraging and experiencing reconciliation wherever conflict exists. That looks at it positively. We might look at peace as peace in action with adults of all ages, children of all ages, working together to solve problems and challenges, looking at it positively. And to solve these challenges without emotionally or physically damaging other people. I think that's an important part to look at, that we don't physically or emotionally damage other people. And if we might put all these together, it might equal shalom, which is wholeness, peace, justice, unity, community, well-being. Would that be a fair definition of peace that we all sort of are searching for wherever, whether it's peace in the world or peace at home? Think of that. Wholeness, justice, unity, community, well-being. So we may want to think of peace as more than just plain the absence of conflict or war, but it may be learning of values of reconciliation and problem solving, learning of justice and love, of establishing proper relationships on the outside, as well as a sense of well-being on the inside. Who am I? Who are you? And who am I in relation to you?
A Bill of Rights would say life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Sure.
Happiness inside as well as outside.
Sure. Very good. Okay. So if we have that as the bottom level of what peace is, some of our hopes, some of our dreams, some of our wishes for peace, how do we go about it? How can we begin this peace with love, justice, and reconciliation? And can we begin it perhaps at home? And that's where I'd like to focus tonight, on the whole issue of peace, of where, how do we work for peace? How do we work for peace within our home, whether it's between partners, whether it's between parents and children, whether it's between siblings, whether it's between you and your neighbor, or your extended relatives, family members. In some conversations earlier this week, talking about what courses, and I mentioned I was doing things on parenting, someone said, do you deal with the issue of your own parents? I don't have that on the schedule. It's a course that I'm hoping to do in my work this fall, coming to terms with your parents. Both of my parents are dead, but I still recognize and am quite aware of how I've been influenced by them, both positively and negatively, and how I have to work to reinforce the positive and how I have to work to reprogram the negative. And I think we all have some of that to do, whether we want to admit it or not. And I look sometimes with great concern and try to figure out how am I parenting our two daughters? How have I parented our two daughters in ways that they're going to have to reparent themselves afterwards and try to figure out new ways? I'm sure there are a variety, and we have conversations about them every now and then. Say, particularly in the kind of work that I'm doing, a lot of education for parents, we would ask them, what would you say, what would you suggest that I can remind them of what parents ought to do and ought not to do? And so far they're fairly kind in saying what we can continue to do, and every now and then they'll throw in something as they feel that they feel comfortable enough with it. Next time around, Mom, why don't you do such and such as another option? Or here's another possibility, and that's fine too. I've learned a lot of things from our daughters, and I'll continue to learn from them, and I hope they'll continue to learn from me. Sometimes it's more one way than it is the other way. Well, where do we begin? Wonder if there's anyone who doesn't wish for peace somewhere. I think that's probably on all our agendas. There's a variety of things. I've just brought down a couple of books. There's a number of them if you look on the bookshelves in the bookstore. A lot of that deal with the issue of war and peace in the world. There's more that deal with the issue of peace within your family, too, and I don't have a lot of those books here. Siblings Without Rivalry, one of the ways. A couple of books on intercommunications, whether it's with your partner or with other adult friends, whether you have a partner or whether you don't. How do you deal with other adults in your relationships? To recognize that we have this interdependence that's important and necessary. Caring Enough to Confront is one of the series by Augsburger, and this is from the library here in Koinonia. caring enough to confront dealing with issues, particularly of anger. How do we deal with those strong, strong feelings of anger that can certainly come between people for peacemaking, wherever, in the home or in the world? And that's important too. Peace is Possible. I like the title of that particular book that was written from a Canadian perspective. From the Roman Catholic viewpoint, it's an excellent one. When we deal with issues of peace, I have a brother who has been in both in World War II. He went back in in airlift. He was in World War II with air, and at the end in the airlift between East and West Germany, or getting into East Berlin, into the American sector of Berlin. He was back in during the Korean invasion, and he's been in the reserves ever since. When my mother was alive, when we talk about some issues that dealing with peace, and he knows that my husband and I are pretty much pacifists, and wonder how could I come out of a family that had a father that was in the First World War and two brothers that were in the Second World War and come out a pacifist. Well, I think it's fairly understandable. I didn't like it. But I decided that after reading this book on the plane coming here, that I was one of the safest ways for me to discuss with my brothers to send him Peace as Possible and let him know. When our second daughter was in her last year of university, she was asked by one of her psychology professors, from whom she had taken a course on the psychology of peace, to join him in doing a research project that he was doing to write a paper for a UNESCO conference that was to be in Spain a year ago this spring. And the title of the paper that she researched and helped write was, "Is War Inevitable?" And it was interesting in that they did a survey among students at Wesleyan University, which is a private university in Middletown, Connecticut. And then they did surveys in two community colleges in Connecticut that were from the same area. And the interesting conclusions were that the students at the community college, at one community college and one state university, said, "No, it's hopeless. We're going to have a war. No way out of it." Students at Wesleyan, where you can get all varieties, said, "Sure, and we're working so that it can happen." I don't know if we would take a survey here. What kind of response?
Talking about war or nuclear war?
I'm talking about war, any kind of war. And in this day and age, war is going to be a nuclear war. It's not quite happening, and you wonder how far we are from it happening in Central America, or from a variety of the other places where war is going. But it can escalate too quickly. So I'm not sure that we really want to distinguish, because it can move so quickly from one to the other.
Vietnam,
well, wars that would
Granada
come ahead. Wars that would go from here, from 1987 on, where we're so much closer to that midnight on the world clock. Well, how, where do we begin with in our homes to develop this whole idea that that war is not inevitable, that peace is possible, the book. there's quite a strong group of people, more so in the Roman Catholic Church than many of the Protestant churches, but it's beginning to rub off on us too, called Parenting for Peace and Justice. Jim and Kathy McGinnis from St. Louis have done a lot of writing and a lot of work and a lot of workshops to help look at the issue of peacemaking in the home. What can we do with our children? What can we do with our partners? And I'd like to extend this even further if they happen to be, what was the term that was coined a couple of censuses ago, the postal cues, persons of opposite sex sharing same living quarters, which happen to be more and more in our society today, that it doesn't happen to be just in terms of parent-child. As we talk about peacemaking in the home, wherever that home happens to be, whether it's the apartment that several young adults share, whether it's on the campus, in a dorm room that's shared, or whether it's in the biological home, or the blended family, where do we begin with peacemaking in our relationships with each other? And I'd like to start with one possible, we can have a variety of levels here, and one is that affirmation of yourself affirming yourself that you are indeed, as a child of God, a worthwhile creature with dignity, that you're okay. I like to deal with the idea of the sign that we wear, and those who have been in either of my other two sessions will know, as we talk about the sign that says, I am lovable and capable, I-A-L-A-C, that I think is a gift to us from our Creator as we're born, and that we don't often come in touch with often enough. And the feelings that we have about ourselves, not that, boy, am I big and better than the rest of you, and I can either beat you up, or I earn more than you do, or I'm more important than you are, or I'm a better speaker, or whatever. That's not the kind of affirmation of yourself. That affirmation of yourself that says, I'm okay, and so are you. Everyone else is too. I'm not better. I'm with you, and we're both okay. And to begin with that feelings of being okay ourselves, so we can go the next step and to say, you're okay too, and affirm others. I tell a lot of my classes, and the first time I did this, I was teaching a class in human sexuality during a summer session at the University of Guelph in Ontario. And I had a group class of about 60 students, ranging, in, I suppose, from about 19 to 25, or maybe there are even some older there. And talking about, as we deal with issues about our own personal sexuality and our sexual identity, how we feel about ourselves, how can we affirm ourselves, and I gave them a piece of homework that said it would be the shortest piece of homework that they will probably ever have, and it's one I hope might have the most effect on them. And I told them that each morning for this next week, I wanted them, when they woke up in the morning and looked in the mirror to comb their hair or brush their teeth or shave or put on makeup or whatever, that the piece of homework that they had to do was to look in that mirror, smile at themselves, and go to that face in the mirror. And I asked them every class after that, how many of them have done their homework? And I'd get a few scattering of hands. I noticed that there was always one fellow who did raise his hand. I hope he was feeling better about himself. As some would say, I burst out laughing. Well, that's okay. At least you'd have a smile to start the day with. And maybe you'd feel a little bit happier, more cheerful. But how do we feel good about ourselves and begin with peace within ourselves? And along with that peace of affirming ourselves comes with the peace of reconciliation as a Christian, as a child of God who believes in the resurrection as part of our whole gift, that gift of forgiveness that's given to us that we may give to others as well. So we have that affirmation of ourselves, that we can affirm ourselves as being okay because we are children of God, and that we are forgiven by Him. The affirmation of others. Earlier this spring, my husband and I went to a Parenting for Peace and Justice training workshop. And this might be something you do in your home congregation if you have a intergenerational event or a family gathering, or you do it in your own home. We're planning to do it when our daughters come home at Christmas time, because part of the Christmas decorations we have for our tree include a series of these little chain things, you know, the kids make in kindergarten, that our older daughter, who's now 25, made when she was in kindergarten. And they're beginning to look pretty scruffy. And I think they need to be replaced. I'm not sure that they'll ever, I think they'd be added to instead of replaced, because some items for our Christmas tree just can't be thrown away, it seems. But one of the exercises that we did in this workshop was to take slips of paper, an inch wide and maybe 4 or 5 inches long, and give each family, have people join together in family units, and give them some colored pencils or colored felt tip pens, and have them write down affirmations on these strips of paper, as many affirmations that they can do in maybe 15 minutes. I like your cheery smile. I like Sarah's positiveness about whenever she feels she's down, she can find a way to be up again. I like, rather than you're such a good kid, the kind of you, the label that's put on you is a little bit hard to take, and you don't know what it means about being a good kid. Be specific. What is it that you like? And to own that liking, I like, I appreciate, I recognize, I affirm, I'm pleased about? And fill in the blank. What is it that you affirm that you're pleased about, that you recognize? Write it down on that slip of paper. And then take these and have a little tube of Elmer's glue or something and make a long chain that you can hang up somewhere in the house, or make it into a lei that gets worn around the neck, or plan to put it on your Christmas tree this Christmas. Share it. Ours has stayed out on a little ledge by our television, and it's interesting to see the number of students who come in the house and take a look at that and begin to read. It's like reading a rosary set of beads to find all these things on it, I suppose. We don't often get these affirmations from other people enough. And although, as adults, our feeling of well-being is most important to come from inside and not rely on other people to make me feel okay. No one can make you feel anything without your permission. And it's helpful to have these affirmations. It's great, it's enriching, it's rewarding. They're nice warm fuzzies. But you have to give some to yourself too. Because if you're on a desert island, or snowbound up in your cabin without anyone around and no radio or whatever, radio wouldn't help you affirm yourself anyway. But who's going? Are you going to feel you're absolutely nothing, empty, void of okayness because there's nobody saying, hey, you're a good kid, you're great, I like you, have you around? You have to do some of that yourself. But it's important to also share those affirmations with other people. So that's one of the ways to help build peacemaking in the home. Peacemaking wherever you happen to be. How you begin with yourself, how you share that self with other people. The sharing of feelings, information, and experience might be another option to use, another strong element that can help in peacemaking wherever you are. Sharing, how willing are you to share your feelings? The general way of describing our culture, our present culture, is that women supposedly have ease in sharing their feelings and men have difficulty in sharing their feelings. I'm glad there's a new age coming because I think that's becoming a little bit less a definitive line. I think it's becoming easier for some of the younger generation to cross over that line back and forth. And I think it can be still a possibility for those of us in than the other generation, whatever level you want to put that, depending where you are, to come out of ourselves and say, it's okay to own some feelings, to recognize what my feelings are, and to share them with someone else, and that they'll listen. That's another element that's important in peacemaking, the ability to listen to each other, whether it's to children, or whether it's to partners, or whether it's to friends, to really listen to another person. Not to try to fix them or rescue them or say that's really not as bad as you think it is, which is in a sense putting them down, but to accept the feelings that they have as being okay. Those are their feelings, even though you may have different feelings, but you might be able to agree to disagree. Your feelings are yours, my feelings are mine. Even though they're in conflict, I can't deny yours, and I don't want you to deny mine because that's the way I feel. And maybe with your accepting of my feelings, I might come to a different realization about them. And say, gee, they're really not so, I really don't feel quite that bad after all. In fact, maybe I don't even feel that way after all. In fact, maybe things are a lot better than what I thought they were. Gee, it's nice to be accepted, even when I have terrible feelings, and I can change my feelings. Feelings are okay, feelings aren't right or wrong. It's how feelings get put into behavior and action when they become judgeable. So to recognize that the feelings that we have, the feelings that you have, are okay, even though I may feel uncomfortable with them. I'll take care of my feelings, you can take care of your feelings, and to be able to own them. So the other night at the afternoon at one of the workshops that we need to begin to own our own feelings rather than saying, that makes me feel, or you make me feel. If I do that, I'm really giving you a great deal of power over me, that you have control over my feelings. And I don't want to give you control over my feelings. I want to own them myself, and I want to be in charge of them, because that I'm going to have to decide according to my feelings what my behavior is going to be. So I can listen to you put me down, and I can say, well, gee, maybe I really do have to change. Or I can say, wow, something really must have bothered you that I'm getting dumped on. I wonder how I can help you, or how I can listen to you, and not so you can feel better about yourself. Or to say, I just disagree with you. That may be your opinion, but I have a different one. And we can agree to disagree. So that sharing of feelings in order to understand each other better. This is certainly a beginning of peacemaking, wherever it is. I've heard someone say that if all the leaders of the world could take a sauna together each evening, we'd probably live in much greater comfort of peace for the world, because there's a sense of relaxation, a sense of sharing, a little bit more openness in there than there may be in other places. If everyone got together to have a cup of tea in the afternoon, we might see each other in a different light. That we each have concerns, worries, and fears. Sharing of feelings and understandings. I mentioned my brother, with whom I can't talk about issues of war and peace. I also had a difficult time telling him when I visited him for all of 36 hours last week, en route through Minnesota, that we have an international, we have a gentleman from mainland China who is living in our house this summer. He came to us as a host home for a week through World University Service through Canada to help him get settled for finding housing and such for his next 6 months of study at the University of Waterloo. He's a professional engineer in road building and has come to do some more work in the Canadian techniques of road building. And we've had such a good time that first week and sharing together that knowing that we were going to be gone for a good amount of time this summer, we asked if he wanted to stay on in our house. And so we were together for a little over a month, really 6 weeks before we left to come west. Because my brother would say, you have a communist under your roof. How can you manage to have, how is a communist under your roof? One of the things I've discovered is that he gets hungry the same way we do. He gets tired the same way we do. He has a family of a wife and two teenage daughters who are at home that he gets lonesome for in the same way that we miss our daughters. That he likes to talk and share ideas the same way we do. And that there's a lot of capitalism going on in China, which surprised me. And I'd laugh at every time he's described something, I'd say, Charming, that sounds capitalistic. Are you sure that's what's going on? And he'll smile back and he'll say, yeah, it is. That's what's going on. We're getting to be more like you. And I think there's been a great wealth of sharing that's gone on in this time and understanding that maybe he has fears that Russia and the U.S. are going to battle it out over China and over Canada. And we're going to get caught in between. And maybe none of us will end up surviving, which is the scariest part of all. Well, that sharing of feelings, information, and experiences has helped us bridge a kind of understanding that he has some real care and concern for this earth and for this world and for people in it, just as we do. And that although we may have powers over us that are rattling chains and making war whoops, that we may have to speak of our concerns and our feelings a little bit more loudly. And he's saying that there's a lot more. He went through the Cultural Revolution as a university student, and how in the Cultural Revolution in China, the university students backed it, and then gradually realized what an oppressive revolution it was and began to fight against it. And so in a sense, he was sent out into the countryside away from university to teach these university students what the life of the countryside was like and to get the real revolution back into them again. And he said they couldn't do it because we understood that this was not what our China was about. And maybe we have some of that same understandings about what our hopes and dreams are about. So that affirming of self and other, getting in touch with our feelings, sharing those feelings, information, and experiences with other people can be a basis for helping peacemaking in the home as well. That we can resolve conflicts, little ones and big ones. by sitting down and working through them. We may have to do some time out, we may have to do some cooling off when it comes to the big size ones, before we can come and say, let's see how we can work through this. And that's sometimes very, very scary. I've had to do that with my executive director on a couple of occasions, where we've had very differences of opinions. And I enjoy very much the job that I'm doing, and I'm not willing to go out and look for a new job at age 53. And there have been times we've gone into problem solving, and he's walked out on me. And there's been times we've gone into problem solving that I've wanted to walk out on him. But we've stuck it out. And I think we both can now smile at each other and affirm each other and say, okay, I may have some disagreements about this, but we'll see how something else might run. Problem solving. How do we go about problem solving? Sometimes it's difficult to admit that you own a problem. And that might be the first big step. And if you're feeling okay about yourself, then you can feel, okay, there's a problem. I want to win it. But I don't want to win at the other person's expense of losing, because then another problem begins. The feelings of rejection, revenge perhaps, that make other issues to have to deal with. But as you can deal with the problem and to identify it, what are your needs? What are my needs? And to be able to recognize and to be able to speak of your needs. Sometimes we deal with teenagers, adolescents, and sometimes it's not just adolescents, it may be adults. And you'll say, well, what are some of your feelings about this? What do you really need? I don't know. I know, but I'm not going to tell. My mother was one who, I'm just not going to tell. That's one of the things I have to relearn myself. Is not to box up when I'm really got strong feelings about something. And that in order to problem solve, we have to get out some of our feelings and some of our needs. To be able to understand the other person's position, even though you don't agree with it, even though you think it's the most cockeyed notion in the world, to recognize that's the other person's needs. I have some other needs too, and one is maybe to try to understand it a little bit better. And to accept you, even with those crazy ideas. And that brings another point, to recognize that crazy ideas and behavior that you differ with does not equal the person who's behind it. There's a difference between the behavior and the person. And we may say this frequently as we deal with children, I love you, but I don't love what you're doing. And people will say, well, they know you don't. I bother saying that because if you don't love what they're doing, you know you don't love them. Well, I'm not so sure. Unless we tie ourselves up so strongly with what we do as being me, rather than being a part of me or an extension of me, and we need to make that differentiation too. That I am not always all my actions. I sometimes need to go back and say, I'm really sorry. I really goofed on that. And let's start over again. Let's figure out what else we can do. Or, boy, I really don't know what I was thinking about them, but let's start all over again. I'll come in the door and let's pretend that let's erase the other. I'm sorry about it. Let's begin a new direction and see how we can go through it. That's an important model for whomever, for children, for other adults, that it's okay to say I'm sorry. Those are important words. It's okay to offer forgiveness. When I was doing some graduate work in counseling a number of years ago. It was at a very stressful time in our household. Paul had gone through open heart surgery. He went back into the hospital two different times later with severe blood virus. And I was teaching full time at the university, and our daughters were ages 9 and 12. My mother came to help us out, and my mother was not a person who felt very comfortable outside of her little rural element, and she didn't have her friends around, and she was feeling very much alone and not being capable and so forth. And so on top of all that, I had my mother to deal with. One of the assignments I had to read was the book by Albert Ellis, the New Guide to Rational Living. And somewhere in the first 20 pages or so, Albert Ellis blames all the ills of the world on the church. the guilt that religion produces in people. And at that point, I couldn't take it, because the church was a very strong support for me. And I ended up taking an incomplete in the course because of this brief paper, I mean, a two-page evaluation of a 100-page book. So sometimes later, when things began to quiet out, I got back into reading the book. I got to about page 78, and he, Albert Ellis, a non-Christian, invents forgiveness. And I almost threw the book away again, and I thought, no, I've got to get this course. I've got to get a grade for this course. But I use that as an illustration in the secular groups that I do to say, whether you're a Christian or not, forgiveness is important, to be able to forgive ourselves and to forgive the other person. But I think particularly as Christians, we ought to make use of that important gift of forgiveness of ourselves and of other people. That's important for peacemaking. It may be the most important thing for peacemaking. And sometimes that's very important to involve in the whole process of problem solving. The fact that there's forgiveness available for each one of you. I can't agree with what's happened, but I forgive you for doing it. Now let's learn from that experience, and where can we go with it? Stephen Glenn, if any churches are looking for a good program to do in parenting, I think it's even broader than that. Stephen Glenn has one that's called Raising Capable, Responsible Young People. Raising Capable Young People. And it's one I noticed that there's a page written up for it in the resource book. Look under parenting and in the introduction. Stephen Glenn talks about the EIAG, to look at the experience, to investigate it, to analyze it, and to generalize about it. Or the what, the why, and the how. What's happened? Why did it happen? Don't ever ask the question, why did you do that? Most people can't answer it. But what were you thinking about when it happened? What caused that to happen? So we may replace the why more often with another what. And then the how, generalizing. How can we do something differently so that same problem doesn't occur next time? Particularly those reoccurring problems that happen within the household, whether it's between roommates or partners or kids. Okay, this has happened. What can we learn from it? Why did it happen in the first place? What was going on that this particular thing happened? And what can we do about it so it doesn't happen again? That's another form of problem solving. A longer way of going through it is to look at the needs and identify the needs and feelings, to brainstorm possible solutions. What are your alternatives? There's got to be alternatives. There's always a yes or a no, if nothing else. But be creative and put down all alternatives from the ridiculous to the sublime. Sometimes the craziest ones at least allow a release of tension when you can laugh a little bit and not be quite so serious. Come up. Come up with a whole range of them. And then don't evaluate them while you're brainstorming, because that just stops the creative process. And then when you run out of new ideas, then let's go back and look over them. What are the consequences of each of these? How, if we did this, what would happen? If we did that, what would happen? Which ones could I accept and which ones can't you? And you can cross out which ones that are non-negotiables for you. Then see what you've got left. If you don't have anything left, start back at B again and do some more brainstorming. Look over a list again, and maybe you decide some of them aren't so bad after all, and you might be able to accept them. Find what are still left, and how can you put that, whatever you decide to choose, so that it's a win-win situation, not a win-lose, for either you losing or me losing at the expense of the other winning, but that we both win. That's for peace. And then to decide, who's going to do what, when, where, and how? That's, sometimes we stop at that point, okay, let's do this, fine, we can agree to that, let's do it. And then it doesn't get done, and you can get madder than ever, because here we went through all of this and nothing's working. Well, if you don't decide what responsibility is going to be yours and what's going to be the other person, you don't know what to do, and you're going to wait for the other person to take the first the first step, and you might be waiting a long while. Or you might feel that you're taking all the steps and being dumped on, being the martyr, and you get other feelings generated from that. So decide what each one's responsibility is supposed to be, and how you're going to go about doing it, when are you going to accomplish whatever has to be accomplished, and then decide when you're going to go back and check it out. It's important, particularly for partners to do this, for parents to do this, to be a model to each other, and to show each other that you respect each other rather than I'm the boss and you're the slave. We, in the United States, went out of that with the Civil War. Let's not keep carrying on an undemocratic system in our home when we had so many battles to keep democracy in our country. Let's make our home be a model of that democratic country that we want to keep viable, that we're willing to spend so much money on and the lives of so many people on to preserve democracy, and then we don't even act on it in our home. The home should be the model for our democratic society. Perhaps if we get some of these problems solved, we can go about enjoying some life together, to find positive experiences. That's another important element of peacemaking. What can we do that's enjoyable together? The hike up to Heart Lake, the hike down just through the flowers, the wildflowers, sitting together in Vespers, coming up to Holden together, taking walks down around the block at your neighborhood at home or down the road if you live out in the country, to find some of that together time. We have a little dog at home, and although the dog knows which side of the bed it can sleep on, usually mine, the dog also knows that Paul is the one that walks him every morning and every night. Last summer we had our daughter's big dog home with us for the summer while she was on an internship in Scotland. And it took two people, generally. You were worn out if you took both dogs at a time. So our little dog learned how to keep out of the way of the path of the big dog so it wouldn't get stepped on. But we discovered that all last summer, during the 3 months that we had the two dogs, Paul and I generally went out walking in the morning and at night. And we were rather sad when the dog went back to Chicago again and we didn't have the excuse to go walking. Or you could find an excuse, well, if you walk the dog, I'll put these things away. Or you do this and I'll do that, and we divide labors again. And that we needed to find the time to say, okay, this can wait, let's go walk the dog first, and then we can come back and do this together, so that you have some time. The average parent spends 14 minutes a day in interaction with a child, and most of that time is spent in ordering, directing, threatening, controlling. And maybe 2 minutes in meaningful conversation. Well, let me tell you, the statistics for partners isn't much better. So we need to make time. We make time for other people. The person who shares the next office or the desk next to us or that we pass down the road or the neighbor, we more often make the time to spend in passing conversation with them because you want to be neighborly. But we don't take the time with the people with whom our life should be most important. The partner, the roommate, the child, the sibling, our parents, whoever. And that's important, to make that connection of time so that you've got a happy, positive basis from which to begin that peacemaking. You can begin to feel better about yourself. You can begin to feel it's okay to have differences of opinion, and we can do problem solving. It's okay and safe to share feelings. Now, there's a variety of other things I want to quickly go through. You can find a lot of them in this little book, How to Teach Peace to Children, and I think it's generalizable to other ages and not just with children. Some might be to share a support group in church, your neighborhood, your family, so you can feel comfortable with a group to share problems. And deal with your frustrations. To experience forgiveness is one that I talked about a little bit earlier. Peacemaking should also mean that we want to be peace-loving, therefore we're not violence-loving. And I'm constantly amazed at the number of violent movies that are out and are on television. and how much money some of the violent movies can make. And maybe we ought to say something about peace issues by saying something about not participating in violent and, quote, entertainment. Don't buy war toys for your children or your grandchildren or whoever. And maybe protest the store saying, Christmas is the time of the birth of our peacemaker, the one who's come to bring peace. Why do we give war toys at an important time like Christmas time or any other time during the year? You might say, what's the difference between buying them a gun and letting them use their finger and saying, we're at least not providing a concrete symbol of this gun that's become more and more devastating and destructive. I mean, just the rifle was one thing to shoot one person, but most of these are rockets that blow up a whole huge area. We don't have to put our money into war toys. Work to avoid fighting, whether that's among children, among your partners, within your family, your extended family, in your neighborhood. Recognize what it is that provokes violence in another person, but that provokes irritation in another person. And you all know some people who always just are the kind that want to jab a little bit, and they think it's funny, and they'll give a little comment that doesn't feel so good, but they keep twisting this knife a little bit more and a little sarcastic, a little bit more criticizing. And if you say, you know, that's not funny, they'll say, can't you take a joke? Well, you know, if you have to explain a joke, I don't think it was ever meant to be a joke. You may really have meant it to be a put-down or a criticism or sarcasm. Another thing that this little booklet brings up is perhaps to de-emphasize possessions and to re-emphasize the person. That people are important, not things. And we've often put things at a higher level than people. Don't touch that! And slap, 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 because a youngster has reached toward a plant or a special possession or something, or dare touch, or siblings will say, that's mine, don't touch, you can't wear my sweater. The sweater's more important than feeling on a good relationship with the sibling. How do we put people back in an important place and possessions coming later down the line? Talk about war and peace. Talk about what your values are. Have you shared your values with your partner or with your children? One time coming back from a campus ministry staff conference in the Midwest to New York State, where we used to live, we stopped to camp one night, and we didn't feel like getting supper, so we went into a restaurant and realized it was the slowest place and it was very busy. We were going to have to wait, but there wasn't any other place around, so we sat down, very hungry, very tired. And I think our daughters were probably 8 and 11 at the time. It was during the Vietnam conflict, do we call it? And we remember, any of you remember this Life cereal boxes from 15 years ago or so, 10 years ago, that would have the backs on them with little games and ideas and thoughts and such that families could play in little word games, and always a thought for encouraging relationships. There was one that my husband caught that said, sometimes ask your children what they think your values are to find out what you're teaching them. So my husband said to our daughters, what do you think your mom and I value? And our daughters launched into a long thing on peace. My husband had marched against the war in Vietnam. He had done a variety of things. We had done a variety of things as families. And an hour and 15 minutes went by before we got our order. And we didn't realize it. We checked our watch afterwards and realized we had been talking about these issues. Try it sometimes. You might be very surprised what comes out of the mouths of your children or your partner or your friend. What kind of values do they see you living out? And how is your life read by others? How is your life as a Christian read by others? What's the saying? Sometimes the only Bible that people will ever read is your life. Puts a lot of power on us, doesn't it?
Question concerning that. Why do people seek out violence? Why do people go to automobile races to watch
or fights?
Accidents? Why did the Romans go to watch the Christians get thrown to the lions? Why do people seek out violence?
Why? Anyone got an answer? I'm not sure I do. Do you have an answer?
I don't have an answer, but I'd like to know the answer if there is one.
Those of you who like to go to real blood and guts movies. I don't go to my daughter's after seeing Jaws with me. You know, that's a long while ago when she was younger. She said, I'll never sit next to Mom again in a movie. And I said, why? And she said, I only saw half of it. Every time something gory was coming on, you put your hands over my eyes and say, don't look, don't look. She had to wait until it came on television before I finally saw the movie. Why? Is it a kind of release? I don't have to live through that. Or is it a vicariousness to look at those heroes? One of the other things is to talk about peace heroes. How many peace heroes do you know? Gandhi, maybe? How many, name any others? We know a lot of war heroes.
Desmond Tutu.
Good, okay. Glad to have a couple of others. Desmond Tutu, Martin Luther King, sure. Talk about, you know, do some reading on peace and peace heroes. Do some reading on peace and making in the home. Do some reading on communication in the home. Do some reading on the kinds of gifts, skills, tools that can help you be a peacemaker, not just a peace lover. It's fine for all of us to love peace, but we have to work toward it as well. And that means that we need to put it into action.
I'll comment on this question. Violence equals power. And from my view, in reading and so forth, it would seem that most people have an attitude of, I'm not okay, you're okay. So they don't have much power, they don't have much control, they think. So maybe they can identify through the violence. They identify with the person that has the power, that one that's killing and maiming and so forth, or the one that's the vindicator somehow, or the one that's driving the fastest. Somehow identifying and absorbing some power that they don't have in real life, they think, possibly.
That they're getting vicarious power.
Control.
That I don't have that ability, I don't have that power, but boy, I can identify with one who does, and I'll be on their side.
Sure.
And to recognize that we're okay even without that kind of wham-bang power.
But most don't recognize
power.
That. Yeah. The home, unfortunately, teaches you're not okay because the thing is more, you brought up, the thing is more important than you, kid. Get your hand off that kid. Mm-hmm. That's more, it's like a put down, too often a put down. So our responsibility, as you're implying, would be at the home level, teaching the kid that they have value, that they do have power and control, and then they would be less likely to go after vicariously.
And to talk about the issues of being peacemakers. We're not part of the peace church, so to speak, which are generally Mennonites and Quakers and so forth, and yet I think we are. We can be. And we can be in our home good models of what a peacemaker and a peace worker can be like by beginning with us. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me and with you.